Just starting the recording. You can see what's happening in those other groups, and you can find other venues you might want to attend, or at least get the high-level summaries and be aware of what's going on throughout the community. The antitrust policy notice. We are a set of industry collaborators, and we all have our respective companies. We'd like to make sure that things we talk about in this group are open for the community, things that are publicly releasable, anything that's business proprietary or something of that nature. Let's keep that outside the discussion for now. Let's cooperate, collaborate, and have a good time. I've put the chat link the wiki page in the chat, so that you can go there and sign up for on the attendees. Put your name and company and information. That way, we can have a record of who's attending, and also to be able to contact you, should we need to. Let's see, announcements today. The Internet Identity Workshop is going on right now at the end of April. And that should be really interesting. That's always been one of my favorite conferences to attend out in Mountain View, California. Due to the coronavirus this time, it's going to be online only. And we'll see how that goes. That is a really good experiment to have such a large conference on a virtual setting, and I'm looking forward to that. So I think we put the link there in the announcements, and so you can go and sign up, and then that will be a virtual activity. Any other announcements for things that are coming up? Yeah, a lot of what has been on my current schedule, everything's getting canceled left and right due to all the quarantines. So it's important to be safe. I think a lot of people are trying to figure out how to take everything virtual. And that's good. Then more people can attend across the world. All right, well, let's dig right in. So the first part of this call, we'll go over the working group reports. And then the second part of the call, we have Cam Parra from Kiva today. And he's gonna give us a demonstration of what Kiva's doing in relation to Hyperledger Indy Technologies and how that supports their business. So we're looking forward to that. Let's see, did anyone attend the main identity working group this week?
I did not attend, but I did check out the, it looks like Dan's here. Dan attended, I believe.
Yeah, I was just getting off mute there. Yeah, I did attend, and I'm trying to remember what were the key takeaways from that. But no, the one, and it relates to your last thing about upcoming, was Chris Allen. So there's a meetup tomorrow, actually, an SSI meetup where he's talking about, what can go wrong with identity. Let's see, that is, where is that? Ah, here it is. Decentralized, crap.
I did review the notes and some of the recording, and wasn't the main concept the known traveler digital identity, your project, Dan?
Yeah, well, right. So, sorry, I was caught up on the thing tomorrow. Here it is, GoToMeeting. So how to avoid another identity tragedy with SSI. So Christopher Allen is hosting that. Yeah, so I did talk about known traveler digital identity, which is another indie-based effort where the governments of Canada and Netherlands have signed on, along with two airlines, KLM and Air Canada, and three airports, Schiphol in Netherlands and Toronto and Montreal in Canada. to allow opt-in travelers of Canadian and Dutch citizenship to opt into this pilot known traveler digital identity and basically get verifiable credentials in their portable identity wallet, you know, in their smartphones that have basically your virtualized e-passport. So you'll have a verifiable credential from each of the governments that represent your passport details. And you'll have verifiable credentials from your airlines that represent your boarding pass. And then you'll be able to travel through the airport continuum without taking out your passport or boarding pass again. So when you go through border clearance, you're basically recognized because you shared your information ahead of time. You're recognized biometrically via face. All your data was already shared basically after check-in with your departure government, with your rival government, with your airlines, so that, again, that you could go through each of these interaction points using only your face. So like for airlines, biometric boarding says that instead of walking up to the gate agent and, you know, trying to have your 2D barcode scanned from your phone and causing everybody behind you to start cursing you out or fumbling with your boarding pass, there's going to be a KDTI lane where all the basically photos are queued up and then you're just recognized. It does a 1 to, let's say, 100 if it's a small airline, or, you know, 500 if it's a big airliner, I should say, search against your face, and oh, it matches one of the people on the manifest, then you seamlessly board. And the advantage to the airline is they have a more accurate manifest and it's done without agent intervention. Anyhow, so that was the crux of it. But it's basically built on Hyperledger Indy again, using as many of the standards as we can, you know, the W3C standards and related security standards for making sure data at rest, data in flight is all secure. Anyhow, and there's a video that they put on online. So I shared the presentation, which includes a video link, and that's all on the meeting minutes.
That's really exciting. That's a good use case. I've had my phone crash right as I got to the gate to board the airplane and had to go figure out how to reboot that or get a printed boarding pass and get back in line. So that would be a welcome non-kinetic way of doing that. Do you know when they're looking at having any kind of pilot go on?
Yes. So on kdti.org is the official site. And it's a project that I failed to mention. It's all being coordinated by World Economic Forum, you know, who one of their main goals is to get public-private institutions working together. So we helped, you know, write all the content. But if you go to kdti.org, it's there. And it basically says that the pilot's going to be conducted this year. Now, with this COVID-19 stuff going on, I don't know. We haven't we just had another architecture working group meeting today. I haven't heard of that getting postponed yet, like getting pushed back, but it may happen depending on how long this goes. But yes, the target is to have a 6-month pilot where, based on the airline's figures, we could have about 10,000 interactions, maybe not 10,000 unique individuals, but 10,000 interactions over about a 6-month period. Now, that 6-month period, if it started in June, that would contain the 2020 would remain a pilot this year. As we push back from that and we still want to do a 6-month pilot, you know, obviously it might extend into next year.
Mm-hmm. Still, that's a really cool way of doing things, to use your face as your identifier, but then have all your credentials backed by Indy on the back end. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, so there's a few pilots related to Your Face is Your Passport is the tagline. But like at Schiphol Airport today, there's a project called Seamless Flow. So real briefly, every trip you want to go on, you have to, first thing you do is at check-in, take your travel document out, take your e-passport out, go to this kiosk. It scans your travel document, and then you're able to do certain things at that airport using Your Face as Your Passport. So your biometric boarding and your immigration control. But every trip you have to do that with this KDTI, because they're verifiable credentials in your wallet, you can reuse those credentials. You don't have to scan your passport every time. You will have to get your boarding pass attestations from the airline, but you do that basically at check-in. You know, they could send you that attestation, that verifiable credential, you know, over the wire at check-in. Then you, through, you know, to meet all the GDPR and related requirements, you selectively disclose the information that's required by the airline, which is different than what the when the government may have. You know, we hope to extend the pilot to hotels. And right now, today, when we go to travel internationally, we go to a hotel. They typically take your travel document, your passport, and they Xerox it and leave it on file. Well, why do they need all that information? And so you could selectively disclose the data elements that they need through what Indy provides for verifiable credentials, So yes, it's kind of cool. Your Face is Your Passport, and you don't have to scan your e-passport on every trip. You just share it through selective disclosure every time you go on a trip.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I like when we take these really innovative secure technologies, and traditionally when you add security, you add a layer of complexity. And so I like the way things are coming together now where it actually makes life simpler for the users while making them more secure. We'll have to watch that as more unfolds. Let's see, on the, anyone attend any of the Hyperledger Indy calls this week?
Just one other thing on the identity working group. In the notes, they have a list of future presentations they expect to have, and there's some good stuff there. They talked about having Kiva present there as well, Cam, as well as guardianship, IoT, trust for dangerous goods, and ID 2020. So if you're interested in those topics, keep track of the identity working group.
Excellent. Thank you.
On the Indy calls, we did have a contributor meeting this week. The main focus was we've talked over much of February about how to troubleshoot an Indy network. And we took a specific, in this call a couple days ago, we took a specific problem that was seen on the Sovereign network and showed how, Sergey Case showed how he went through the logs to find the cause of the problem. So that recording's there. Anybody who's supporting any network will probably be interested in how that process works so you can get better at it. Just a quick update on the project. We are slowing the pace of development on IndyNode. It's pretty mature at this point, and we're not, there's two features we want to add in 2020, which is support for W3C verifiable credentials rich schemas, and the second is support for the new Anon creds. And so we don't need to release every month like we were, because those are both fairly chunky projects. So we are moving more towards releasing every other month or even every third month. We had a release ready for the end of March. It's just got a couple bug fixes and some rich schema stuff that can't be used until it's exposed in the other tiers of the stack. And URSS is coming out with a new release that we like the improvements to hashing in that. And we're also working on supporting the new Ubuntu 20.04. So we're going to wait. Instead of doing a March release, we're going to do the April release of IndyNode and add the 20.04 support, for Ubuntu, as well as bring in the new URSA. On the SDK side, we have had a release ready since February, but we keep finding nitpicky bugs around Aries interoperability, and we really want this release to be the big, hey, look, Indie SDK supports, LibVCX in the Indie SDK supports the Aries protocol connections for the RFCs for Interop Profile 1. We believe we've got all those bugs sorted, and we're working on that release now. The goal is to have it out before the end of the month. It might be the early April release, but our goal is to get out in March. And again, these releases will also probably be smaller. Most of our focus, again, of all the contributors, is to take libindy and break it into the pieces that will be used by Aries. So the Indie VDR, Indie Credex, Aries Credex, Aries KMS, all these different libraries that are much more componentized rather than a single monolithic libindy. And so that work is really meaning that we spend more time on those libraries and their releases than we are spending on Indie libindy itself, the way it's traditionally been. And then Indie Catalyst is still in progress, getting moved to Hyperledger. And I listened to an update on Indie Semantics, but they're still doing their thing, but I don't remember the details of the last call. So that's the Indie update.
Excellent, thank you. On the Indie SDK, this upcoming release scheduled for end of March would be the next few days. Is that still the larger library, or is that starting to be broken up into individual components?
That one is the larger library. The April-May release, depending on timing, it will be the first time where libindy, we're going to remove a bunch of code from libindy and reference the external library for the verifiable data registry. So we'll replace the libindy ledger communications with a call to indie VDR. And then we're also working on pulling Anon creds out into its own thing. We, meaning the team at British Columbia, has contributed a lot there. A lot of volunteers who just work for the Sovereign Foundation have contributed a lot there. So that's, expect that to really bear fruit over the next two releases in April and May. But this March release is still the monolithic libindy.
Okay, great. Thanks. That being aware of that timing really helps. Thank you. Hyperledger Aries.
Give Richard a quick break, and then he can back up if he needs. Good call this week. We talked a lot about the last 2 weeks. In fact, we've talked both about what we need to do for DID Exchange inside the Aries community to move that forward, and as well as Credentials Exchange version 2 to sort of back off some of the Indiisms and standardize some things. And so those conversations have been really good. I have just I'm in the process of uploading the call from yesterday, so it'll be there shortly if you haven't heard it there. We should shortly arrive at a draft of DID Exchange within the Aries community that we're planning on moving forward relatively soon. So if you are interested in that, it's probably worth the review of the pending PRs and the discussions. And I will make some noise when we think we're there so that we can sort of tune up and tighten anything that we need there.
Excellent. I had a question and I just lost it. Sorry, thank you for the update.
That's right. Richard, did you want to add anything or prep the next couple meetings?
Yeah, so that the main thing I want to add, thank you, Sam, is that the next working group meeting in the morning, because in the U.S. morning time is when we overlap with Europe, we do that every other week. We're going to talk about formal verification on April 8th. We're going to talk about Internet of Things best practices on April 22nd. So that'll be really valuable for people that want to attend. And you can see in the agenda, I updated the list of Aries shared libraries to kind of explain what I was describing a minute ago, and copied a bunch of notes from the Aries call. So those are up to date.
Excellent. Thank you both. Remembered my question. I was asked the other day about DIDCOM and specifics. and where the central focus of DIDCOM development was taking place. Is that taking place in Aries or with diff groups, or where's the focal point of that?
So that's an excellent question, and I should have brought that up. There are two places for two different purposes, and this will make a little more sense in a second. The long-term effort for standardization with the widest community possible is happening at the diff. That's where the ongoing discussions are happening from the long term, and having everything happen there. But we can't have the Aries community just sit and wait for that community to get around to it. There's stuff that we need to move on faster than that. So in parallel, but in a smaller scope, the Aries community is moving forward with the things that they need specifically, looking forward to not doing anything more than they need right now, so that we can use the stuff that's being developed in the diff working group as that matures. The timelines and scopes are different. So the diff scope is very wide and a little bit of a longer timeline. No one wants it to be long, but realistically to solve the problems we're trying to solve, it will be a little longer. And then within Aries, we have a much smaller scope and therefore can move a lot faster to make the changes that we need. And so I anticipate that within a week or two, we will have a draft being considered for a status change, which will sort of cement that in and we can view as a target for interop moving forward. So I hope that helps clarify a little bit. If you are interested in the short term in interoperability, then Aries is with Aries. Aries is a conversation you'll need to pay attention to. And if you're interested in the long term interoperability, then the diff is the conversation you need to pay attention to. That involves a number of us in the community are involved in sort of both conversations because we care about both scopes. But if you only care about one of those, then you can only pick up the one. So it's not the intention of the Aries community to really go past this next step that we're working on right now. But that was in play. So already, and it's not fair for the Aries community for us to not be able to fix our own problems while we wait for the diff work. Does that help? Are there any questions, or does that help clarify?
It does for me. Any questions from anyone else? All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for that clarification. Now I know how to answer the question. What I was aware of is development was taking place in both. And now I have a better answer.
And it is, in case anyone's confused, this is not a fork. This is Aries intends to use the long ongoing work happening at the diff as that matures. So this is not a fork situation. But thank you for the question, Stephen. I appreciate that.
Yeah, what it appears to me is that Aries is very, very tactical, handling very specific near-term problems, whereas the diff seems to be more strategic and long-term. That's kind of my observation.
Your summary is more succinct than mine is, so I think thanks for that.
All right, thank you. Any updates from the URSA community today?
URSA is expecting a release in the next couple of days as well. It's got a new implementation of hashing that it got a bit cryptographic math for me in the conversation, but essentially it's more faithful to keeping the encryption curve after the hash. It's also got some updates to the Apache Milagro wrapper. So those are the key things to expect in URSA.
Excellent, thank you. Anything from Sovereign?
If anybody can correct the way I described that hash to curve piece, feel free, because I have a very vague understanding of it.
So I know Mike's got some good presentations. If you go to the URSA page, there's some links there. He showed me a few presentations when I was in his office a while back that are really just excellent. And they take the difficult crypto and they break it down into very understandable components. It's really well done. I'm excited for that new library.
Hey, what page was that?
I think it's, I don't have it handy, I think it would be listed on the URSA working group page. He sent me some links that I could, after the call, I could locate that. One in particular, what he did is he took zero knowledge proofs and he broke it down into simple algebra. And that was really exciting.
Excellent.
Because it made it understandable, right? Instead of all the crypto black magic.
Yeah. As for your question about the Sovereign Foundation, or the Sovereign Network, I should say, the foundation itself has been going through transition away from needing to do as much fundraising and have full-time staff and towards more volunteer basis. There's been a number of meetings over the past 2 weeks where stewards have been talking about how to continue the good work of the network and keep it in good health, even without having as much support staff. If anybody is interested in assisting with that, please reach out in one of those working groups. And that does mean that some of our colleagues that were working in the Sovereign Foundation, best Aries experts and indie experts on the planet that are looking right now, feel free to reach out and let them know if your team is hiring. So there's some good opportunities there. If anybody needs introductions, I'm happy to give introductions. Of course, Sam can give introductions as well. But the network is in good health and things, it seems to be business as usual as far as the network goes.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, I know that there are a lot of volunteer opportunities right now with Sovereign in particular. So if any of you are looking to get more involved in that particular side of the community, please reach out and we can get you connected to all the right individuals. And it's taking on a more community-centric focus, distributing the work across the community. So lots of opportunities right now. We talked a little bit about DIF just a minute ago. Any more updates on DIDCOM from the DIF group?
The summary there is that we are working on the protocols for establishing connections, and we anticipate having that piece of it relatively integrated relatively well. So there is work to be done there. If you're interested in helping out, we would love your help.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. So today in the latter part of the call, we've invited Cam Parra from Kiva to give us a demo on Kiva's platform and how they're using these identity mechanisms in their work. So Cam, are you still on and ready to go?
Yep, I'm here. Let me turn on my camera. Hey everyone. Thanks Steve. So I'm Cam from Kiva. I've been in the community for quite a bit. I've worked with many of you. But so let me tell you a little bit about, so my colleague Horatio is on the call and he's gonna do the demo in a bit, but let me just give you a little bit of background on our project. So we are currently working in the country of Sierra Leone, and what we're trying to do is bank the unbanked. So that's kind of a fancy term for saying that we want to be able to help those in Sierra Leone to be able to have access to the financial system, to the banks in Sierra Leone and possibly, you know, outside of Sierra Leone. This has been quite a challenge since Sierra Leone has gone through, you know, civil wars, through pandemics of Ebola and other things. And so, the technology there is just not as, updated as it is in other parts of the world. When the way we're using Indy is that we are using it for our EKYC checks at the banks. And so what we do is that, the country of Sierra Leone will issue a credential to a person in Sierra Leone, and then they can use this credential to go into the bank and start their bank account. And we've seen that it does make a huge difference, because the normal traditional ways that that this would be done would be, you know, people would have to have a certain amount of documents, and if one of the documents was lost and they couldn't get it from the government, then they just couldn't have a bank account. So being able to have this digital credential that they can go into a bank and it would take seconds to do the background check or the EKYC, then it changes their lives. So we plan on using Indy that way. We do have our own network. It's an Indy network with various nodes around the world. And so we manage that on our own for right now. And we still are in that phase of we're trying to figure things out. We're trying to see what is the best way that we can do identity in the country of Sierra Leone. We definitely are currently, we manage the credentials for the people of Sierra Leone, but it is in the future pipeline that we want other individuals to manage their own credentials so that it can be true SSI. And even in third world country, we believe that even in third world countries, people should be able to manage their own credentials. Enough of me talking, and I will hand it over to my colleague, Horatio.
Hi, hope everyone's doing fine amid the crisis. I'm going to share here our sandbox system to show like a real-time demo with my fingerprint about how this works in practice. Can you see my screen here?
Yep.
Yeah. So what you are seeing here is the sandbox deployment of the identity tool. So basically, the idea is that we want to add to every bank the ability to use the EKYC as in a way that is very, very optional. So, you know, if they want to do their standard EKYC, they can do that. So you can see this as basically like a pop-up coming when they click a button in their core banking app. So you can see here that for the user to continue, there's a consent screen that discloses all the information that they're going to share. When I click here on accept, the idea is like the bank teller is going to get the NIN, the national ID number of the person. And here we go to the phase of like getting the fingerprint. So you can see here that I'm putting my fingerprint. Let me try that again. So you can see it's real time. Now this is going to fail because it's like a sandbox environment and I don't usually use the right thumb for that. So I'm going to make a change here. I'm going to get the right index. Okay. So you can see my data here. And then from this position, from this screen, they can decide to add this to the core banking, or if they don't have that connected still, they could get like a PDF that is basically going to have like some sort of a signature.
And sorry, so this is Dan. So what you're simulating there is because there is a national ID in Sierra Leone, this mm-hmm. client comes to the bank and says, I claim to be this person with this national ID. And all they give the bank is their national ID number and a fingerprint. And then there's a service that the government offers that you just simulated there, right? To retrieve all the identity information associated with that national ID. Is that what you just did?
No. So this EKYC process is just a signal that the bank is going to use to validate the identity of that person. Like, they go there in person, they use this service from the national registry, they print this, and then this becomes part of the documentation for their case. The idea is that this is going to be enough to open an account. Because right now, what they do is like they need to get a receipt from the power company, from the water company, and so on.
Was it Dan who asked the question?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what we do, So what the service that we are offering is that it's not the government of Sierra Leone. It's us that enables the person to access their wallet from a cloud service, and then them being able to present these credentials. So this is filled with the credential in their wallet.
Okay, yeah, I guess what was confusing me is the logo at the top of the screen, the National Digital Identity Platform. I thought that was like the government national identity. Okay, that they were access. Okay.
Right. We both work together to present the service.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay.
All right, Harisha. I think, is there anything else that you would want to show?
No, this is it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Harisha. Yeah. So everything seems pretty small, but this is going to be a big change for the country of Sierra Leone, just as I explained before. Someone is able to go in and use their own credentials for, you know, instead of having to check all these water bills, all these different things that they would need to go in, they're able to just retrieve something from their wallet, from which eventually we will have the ability for them to export it and for them to own their own wallet. And so they can just go in and present these credentials on their own and be able to start their bank accounts.
So that's cool. I know one of the things, and I'm more of a borders government expert than a financial services expert, but I think one of the problems in like the US is there's no portability of KYC, right? Because between banks, because there's a liability, right? So if you had a KYC from Citibank and you had those attestations in your identity wallet from Citibank, well, you can't really use it to open up a Bank of America account because they have to do their own KYC, right? Mm-hmm. So is that a hurdle that it doesn't matter in Sierra Leone because it's got this government-wide attestation? Like if they wanted to open up a second bank account, they would use the same credential, right?
Yes. So the question is between banks. If you go to a different bank, if you go let's say that you get the documentation from the first bank, right? That is on the legislation part. I think my understanding right now is like they will have to do another EKYC, and this is why the idea is to make this as user friendly as possible, like doesn't have that much friction. Now within the same bank, this is more like at the discretion of the compliance officers there. Like even with this system, right? They are still going to print this. I mean, like when they do the EKYC, it's not going to be approved right away. It's at the end of the day, at the end of the week. This is going to be part of the official documentation of the case. Now if this happens within the same bank, it's more likely that you will need to do the EKYC again. You may have to do a credit check depending on the type of account, but that's a different story.
Right. Yeah. Horacio, may I ask you a question, please?
Yeah.
Do you hear me?
I hear you, but it's like very low.
It could be okay. Nice. I would want to know if there is a combination between biometrics and another type of credential in the enrollment process to your point of view, please.
Well, so the architecture for this is very open. Like we could tie on another biometrics to this. The base of this fingerprint is the information that they use for register people into the elections. This is part of the national registry. But let's say this is open to include some other source of credentials there.
Okay, but my question will be on the storage of these biometrics information, which are very, very sensitive. Because we are working in a project in order to avoid theft of this type of information. And according to our point of view, this type of information should not be stored in the ledger. What is your point of view?
Oh yeah, we don't store it. So, the self-sovereign model. So the same as sovereign credentials, where the credential is given to the individual wallet and it's encrypted in that wallet. We don't store any credentials on the ledger. The only thing that is stored on our ledger currently is Sierra Leone's or the government of Sierra Leone's schema and credential definition for issuing credentials to its citizens.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, same with that KDTI, as I mentioned. Like, we have biometrics photographs in the wallet, just as these guys, the Kiva guys, described. And the only thing on the blockchain itself, on the Indeed network, which we also stood up the Indeed nodes, we weren't using Sovereign or anybody else's. And the only thing that's on there are the public DIDs, public credential schemas, you know, public being the two governments, the airlines, and the airports. No PII ever stored on chain.
Perfect. We perfectly agree. And I would want to add one thing about the new NIST special publication 863, which is quite interesting to my point of view about these obligations. Did you include specification in your work for NIST special publication 863.3 or not?
I'll let the Kiva guys respond first, and then I could provide you my view on KDTI.
Yeah, I'm not too aware of that. I don't know if Horatio is, so maybe this is something that we have to include.
So 863.3, or the whole 863 series, because there's a series of documents there. It's really not tied to blockchain or SSI at all. It's all about digital identity, and really where it comes into play here, especially 863.3, is in the identity proofing process. There's an identity assurance level rating, and when you authenticate, like the Kiva guys were just showing, like with the fingerprint authentication, there's an authentication assurance level described in those documents. And NIST was the first one to break up assurance levels into basically three domains: identity proofing or identity assurance level, identity verification or authentication assurance level, and then federation assurance levels when you're using federated identity. But again, the 863 series is all about digital identity in general, but not tied to blockchain. Now, NIST does have two very good, one very good, I think, documents related to blockchain. I think it was 8212 was their blockchain in general. And then they have a new one that came out in January, specifically on identity management. Usage, the blockchain being utilized in identity management, but two totally separate areas of standards.
Okay, thank you for your answer.
Yep.
Right, and so a big thing about this is we get questions about exactly that, what's stored on the chain. And we do realize that the country that we are working for and the people that we want to serve are people who, their identity could be sought after by, you know, potentially bad actors. And so we would not want to ever store something or their information on a chain where it could be easily accessed. But yeah, that's what we're doing in Sierra Leone. If you have any more questions, you're welcome to shoot us a message on, or shoot me a message on the Hyperledger chat. And yeah, we do work with a lot of the groups in Hyperledger. We work with Ursa, we work with Ares, we work with Indy, and so we're around in the community. So if you see us or if you want to talk, just let us know.
Excellent, thank you. That was really exciting to see how this is being used in the field. Is this live in Sierra Leone right now, or when is it going live?
It's live now. We are doing a pilot.
Okay, so when the citizens then enroll, do they go to like the driver's license branch of the government, or are you set up there? How do they enroll?
They have a national registry office, and people go there to get their cars. They usually use elections cycles to get people to enroll. So right now you can go there. If you don't have your car or you don't remember your number, you can go there, they find you, and they give you that, basically all the physical credentials there. This system that we are doing, one of the benefits that they have is that if you lose your card for some reason, but you remember the ID and with your fingerprint, then you can show your credential coming from the same entity.
Yeah, that's really cool. I lived overseas for a number of years, and where I was, people often didn't carry their ID cards. So this kind of a system would be really welcome, I imagine.
Right. I think in the U.S. we really, many of you might be going, oh, you know, cool, like you're enabling someone to get a bank account, like no big deal, right? But it's because here in the U.S. or probably in Europe as well, you know, you're so easily able to access the bank, you know, and you do it multiple times a day and you don't even think about it anymore. But in countries where that isn't available, you know, this is a huge change for them to be able to go into a bank and get something approved way faster than before. And to not have to, and we also have IDs here that are valid, right? We all carry our driver's license or different things. And those are assumptions we make as Americans, but some of those commodities aren't available in third world countries.
Yeah, definitely. So in the demo you just showed, which was very good, by the way, shows how kind of the government identity side of the information is embodied as a verifiable claim that can be expressed at banks and places. The other part of it's not really KYC so much, but it is a little bit of background. Things like, have you thought about adding in there things like credit worthiness, that type of kind of not the government credential, but it would be valuable to lenders, other types of claims and information?
Yes, this is kind of like the mission of the project. Like the identity is kind of like the first step. The idea here is to help build the credit bureau for Sierra Leone. Right now, that is going to require like more work. We integrate with the current credit that they have, but yeah, like the idea is that after you do the EKYC, the credit, you know, like whatever we end up using to rate is going to be part of what is return.
Yeah, and just to clarify, we're not going to build out something like Equifax where you're getting a credit score, but more of credit history so that, you know, a lender or a bank can look at someone's credit history and be able to trust that source. Because currently it's, Horatio can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think every bank keeps their own credit history, and that might, and maybe the country as well, but it's kept, it's not it's not the most technological way that they keep that. And so we want to help build that out. And the technologies that we're using there are currently planned are Hyperledger Bezu and using the Ethereum technologies, such as smart contracts and Truffle and all the good Ethereum stuff to build this out.
Excellent. Well, that's really exciting. Do you have any plans to move to countries beyond Sierra Leone?
I mean, that would be good, but I think that stuff usually takes more time. Yeah, right now we're like focusing on making sure that we can serve people in very remote locations. Part of the pilot is there's like two banks on the edge. That is going well, but there's still like more learnings that we need to do. Like I'm like many countries that if a country already have credit, they may not need this because they may already have the infrastructure for ID. So yeah, I think it's going to be a step by step, making sure that we learn as much as possible.
Right. Yeah. What we want to get out of Sierra Leone is one, to be able to give this to Sierra Leone and us also learn of how we can implement this for other situations, including like how do we handle credentials in areas where the Wi-Fi, or the internet is just not as fast. So we're just slowly working on that. And they are huge challenges.
So this is Dan again. I would just add that, what Kiva's doing here is the, in the humanitarian space, and the UN put out their strategic development goals, and 16.9 is getting legal identity to the billion folks that do not have any form of legal identity now, and get birth registration done, and then by 2030. Then there was an NGO established 3 years ago now, ID 2020, which says, along the same lines of getting a legal identity to everybody, to all the people without a legal identity, by 2030, by 2020, they want to show that we could have technology that could get us there by 2030. So ID 2020, among other things, established a certification mark that the Technical Advisory Committee defined some requirements, and I'm part of that Technical Advisory Committee on this NGO, all volunteer time, basically. Kiva was one of the proposals, this one in Sierra Leone in particular, that went through that certification mark process and passed, basically. It got the certification mark that it meets these requirements. So if you go to ID2020.org, you could see the requirements for these type of identity systems and how Kiva was assessed against them and how they passed. So there were certain requirements that they had to meet to get that certification mark. There's other applications, blockchain and based, most of them are blockchain based, but they don't have to be. In this area of humanitarian aid, how do we get vaccines to all these folks and make sure they're getting one and only one vaccine? How do we get funding to these folks and make sure that they're getting the right payments, right? And then in the Kiva case, how do they get banked properly, right, and easily? So anyhow, ID2020.org is another related effort that people might be interested in.
Excellent. Thank you for bringing that up. I made a note of that here on my web browser to look at that after the call. Cam, thank you very much for you and Horatio taking the time to present this to us today. This has been really insightful. Do you have a product page that we could steer people towards?
Yeah, we do. Hold on. I can link that real quick.
All right. We'll get that. We'll put that in the chat. And then I've got an associate that asks me periodically about technologies he can use in a different Caribbean country. And so I would like to pass that on to him as well. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you everyone for joining today. It's been a great discussion. It's been insightful. And I hope everything is going well with all the epidemic that's going around the world and that you're all doing fine. And thank you for joining. We will be meeting again here in 2 weeks from today, and I look forward to seeing all of you then.
Thank you. Thanks. Stay safe.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Bye.